ever find yourself thinking, I wish I had a jetpack? Rocket belt. Have you ever felt like a bird?
Why is someone trying to seduce me about Pilot Wing 64?
Why wouldn't they be?
Because it's Pilot Wing 64, John. If you get seduced by an N64 game, you're going to get a paper cut.
That's oddly specific.
You thought we were going to come in and talk about Mario. No, we're talking about the fact there's...
Did you ever want to shoot yourself out of a cannon at a Target?
So before we recorded, Greg pointed out because of the soundtrack. Yeah. The soundtrack to Pilot Wing 64 is very much, I don't know, smooth
sex
soothing
in a bottle,
jazz sounds.
I think is what you're looking for.
Also, yeah, sure.
It's 90 sex sacks. Yes.
Yeah.
Also, I think I said this before, but what's her name? No, Lark? Robin. Robin in the Japanese version of Pilot Wing 64 was named Hooters.
Why
it's a
not?
Good name.
Yeah.
It's a good name.
It's very literal.
Yeah. It fits her.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, Wario. Why is Wario a character in Pilot Wing 64?
It's just the Mount Rushmore thing.
Oh, okay. Well, that makes sense.
Because the Mount Rushmore, Mario takes one of the spots, but then if you fire yourself out of the cannon into Mario's face, it shatters to reveal the truth Wario underneath.
Mario statue.
Is that like the plot of the second Nicolas Cage National Treasure movie or something?
Oh, God, I couldn't keep track of them.
That's the third one. Yeah, That's the one existing entirely to pay off the fact he built himself a pyramid to lie under dead and bankrupted himself, which is real. He did that. I probably should have said that in sultry voice. Do you know Nick Cage built himself a New Orleans pyramid to be dead under and ruined his life? That's too bad. There is something certainly pharaonic about that you've expended the entire resources of the estate to create a place for which you to die under.
If you can't live pharaonic, why live at all, you know?
That's true.
The life pharaonic, James Jones.
Wow, we've already named the episode. Congratulations, John.
No,
you did it.
I just don't think I've
ever heard anybody use that word in normal conversation. Well, not that this is normal conversation. What am I talking about?
Now I've got the images of James and John in the Jacques Cousteau outfits from Life Aquatic with Bill Murray. Just that's what I'm thinking about.
That would be the life pharaonic ironic.
Yeah.
That's it. Yeah, I don't imagine the script they gave to this voice. All right, we want you to go. Like, have you seen Old Spice commercials? Oh yeah, we want you to do that, but for this old ass N64 game about a rocket pack. Do you ever want a rocket pack?
Yeah, I think it's a good trailer, though. Have you ever wanted a jetpack and then, like, he corrects himself, you know, but in the sexy way? Rocket like, no, belt. It's a rocket belt.
I guess the answer, and this will help our iTunes reviews, is we should just make love to the microphone every time we're in front of it, is what you're telling me.
Yeah.
And
You weren't already doing that?
No, I was having more like consistent one night stands.
Kind of a sexless marriage,
microphone.
To be honest, but you know,
I do like the fact
I was
that
in
they
an
will,
open relationship with my microphone.
They will actually be somewhat specific of just like, okay, what's an angle we can take with a certain game? So this is almost the exact like extreme all the way on the other side of the spectrum for like what they did for Majora's Mask, which is, you know, a very kind of macabre, depressing game where they just did this super cinematic trailer showing, you know, all sorts of different snippets from cutscenes and all that about, you know, how apocalyptic it is. And then on the other hand, we've got, well, how do you sell this kind of early tech demo-y game about, you know, hang gliders and jetpacks and those? Well, you know, the music's kind of funky, so, you know, let's go with that. You know? Whereas, like, if you look at the one on the Japanese channel, which I already have, they're almost always essentially the same formula for each game, which is just show the sort of features of the game. So it's just, okay, in the Pilot Wings case, it's like, okay, it's so big. Oh, you can hang glide. You can, Birdman, whatever, the bird suit, fly around freely kind of thing, just showing it in sequence without any kind of flavor. So it's nice when they show some sort of thought about, well, how could we best kind of push this.
I'm going to counter, mm-hmm. though, and say that they should adopt the Japanese approach, but by that I mean have the same format and just do this format. So, like,
oh, this voice for Majora's Mask could work, yeah. couldn't it?
Do you want to ever get crushed by a moon with a face staring at me? What about a hand reaching out and touch someone from the toilet? Like, just like the options are all there. There's plenty of content.
I get the feeling I'm going to have fun editing this.
No, I'm sure you will. And you know what? That's what we're here for. We're here to give, like, there's all kinds of just free available YouTube, like,
I think
sexy
in
facts.
General, if just, what we were here for over the years was to make editing fun, we have failed massively in that endeavor.
Yes. Look, why would we why would we succeed at that endeavor when we succeed at no others either? Like, it's just because we haven't done it doesn't mean it wasn't the objective. Like, that implies that we succeed in other objectives, which I definitively argue we do not.
Anyway, just like before you start like crinkling some wrappers or something to cater to the ASMR people, just let me know.
Well, I'll take those kinds of YouTube numbers. Is that what we're up for? I'll do
right.
it. Yeah.
Just let me know and I won't edit them out, you know.
Oh, okay. Good. Yeah. I'm gonna go find some like rolling paper and we'll do that.
Excellent.
ASMR POV, I'm making a bad podcast. So Pilot Wing 64 we knew that, but I don't think we expected this. I mean, if you expected this, you're fucking broken. So anybody out there who thought, I really want to get, I don't just want to play Pilot Wing 64. I want to be romanced into Pilot Wing 64. Congratulations.
I want to light some candles and play some N64.
Yeah.
What's wrong
Open
with that?
Open some champagne, play it in the tub.
I mean, you're speaking my language. I'm just saying. It makes my ears perk up. You know?
Yeah, I know.
Little taste of the bubbly, James.
Yeah, bubbly in the tub and bubbly in the glass. I get it. But I think. If this is your particular thing that you've been waiting for, one, congratulations. Two, it's a very particular taste you have.
You could say it was oddly specific. Yeah.
You could, mm-hmm. but I didn't want to ape. I didn't want to ape the line.
Yeah, we're more redundancy, would we? Again, no, Paris is all.
That's their line. They thought of that line. I'm going to let them have it. It's fine. I guess I have to technically explain this as a podcast, although by now you've probably figured that out. We've said it. I am James. I'm joined by John.
It's it's great to be here, James.
Now, drop it. Give me the lower octave. Come on. You got it in you.
It's great to be here, baby.
Fuck, I wish I hadn't asked for that. That's my own fault. Greg.
Ahoy, ahoy, everyone.
Guillaume.
Good evening.
Nobody has last names this week because last names aren't sexy. it is October 6th, 2022, and this is episode 792.
October is the sexiest month of the year, James.
I mean, it's a scary month, and us trying to be sexy is terrifying. So,
last names are not sexy, which is why 007 is just always like James. Just call me James.
Yeah, for England, James. But it was like the 60th anniversary of Doctor No, and all that, and all the sort of, you know, Amazon are pushing that because they own MGM and Bond or whatever else they own these days.
You can watch every Bond film for free if you have Prime.
And finally go, oh God, yeah, they are mostly the same. But yeah, it was kind of a little, you kind of thought, nah, they probably won't be coordinated and do GoldenEye this month. And then, lo, we had the Pilot Wings trailer to confirm that.
Absolutely not.
This year, they've missed the 25th anniversary of the game, and they've missed the anniversary, the 60th anniversary of Bond, the character. So when it does come along, it's going to seem a little bit kind of spare, you know, a little bit out there on its own.
You know, spies don't come when they're expected. Oh, if this was a Bond film, there'd have been a joke there. But I'm not going to make it because I'm not.
They arrive precisely when they mean to. Is that what you say? They're like wizards.
Nope.
Is that where we go?
Yeah. No. Yes. I was definitely making a wizards reference. I was not referring to anything.
I'm sure Amazon is already thinking about the Bond Gandalf crossover. You know that they will presumably make that happen quite surely.
Oh my God!
You got to take everything you own, and if you're not intermingling them, you're not trying.
What a nightmare. I mean, it's going to be with the boys as well. I mean, there is an ad right now that runs for Prime where it's NFL, the boys, and the Rings of Power. And it's just fast cutting between the three of them. And the funny thing is, it seems like the Thursday night game is exclusively the domain of the worst matchups. Like, what if we had two geriatric quarterbacks as our starting QBs for this thing? By design, not by injury. This was the goal to start with. Followed by, like, shots of the boys, this dystopian take on the Marvel superhero universe. And then, like, this weird, hyper-violent version of the Rings of Power that's not... Numenor's mostly about talking. Like, there's a lot of talking in the Second Age. It's just click, 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 jumping between them. So yeah, I mean, why not have, I'm blanking on his name now. The crafter of the rings. Celebrimbor.
Yes.
Why not just have him at this game? And he could just hand out rings to people who have really good plays. If you're not mixing, you're not trying. So. Oh my God, we're going to have a Bond film launch directly on Amazon. Jesus Christ. All right, well, that's...
If they ever find someone to play him, he's struggling quite a bit. One day it'll just be like a CG amalgam of all the old Bonds.
There you go.
It won't even be a person anymore. It'll just be like mostly Sean Connery, but with like a hint of Brosnan and Craig.
I do like the idea of, like, what if we hire this other guy who's like 55 to play Bond? It's like, do you think that's a good idea? Maybe I'm a little bit lower, a little bit younger, like somebody who's not gonna injure themselves in every film. That'd be cool. Speaking of films where people really are putting their backouts to deliver like genre changing performances, the Mario Trailer Direct happened today, which is a real thing. It was a direct to show a different video that will be everywhere anyway in the near future, and we're going to talk about it now, I guess. And I say, like, really putting your back out to deliver an epic performance. Chris Pratt really gave you exactly what we said he would give you literally when he was announced, which is he's just going to be Chris Pratt.
Yeah. And also, of course, by putting your back out, you mean actually removing Mario's ass as well.
I didn't, actually. Mm. I didn't find myself looking at Mario's ass, John.
Hey, I mean, I'm not looking at it either, but it was a topic of discussion on the internet that Mario has a very flat butt.
I've heard that he has like a negative ass or something.
Yeah, like, I mean, and I guess
concave.
I guess the isn't that
Hank Hill? Isn't that Hank Hill's thing? Is that he couldn't sit because he had a concave butt? Are we fucking quoting? Oh my God!
I'm just saying this is not me James. This is the internet.
This is not me. This is Lon Jindeman.
I am bringing this up because this is too important. I mean, I know that our listeners out there are saying, John, talk about
know
Mario's
that's not
ass.
The plot.
What is your take? What is your
How do
hot
we know
take
that's
on
not
Mario's non-ass?
And we don't know this is not the whole plot of the movie. That in fact is the whole of Bowser kidnaps Peach thing is out. It's a rip-off of the second Austin Powers movie, except instead of removing his mojo, they've removed his rear end.
So
he's gonna get it
you're
back.
You're saying it's the quest to save an entirely different Peach.
That was good. Now, I just think that that I think this might be maybe another Sonic the Hedgehog kind of thing where people are like, oh my god, he has no butt.
Oh yeah, they're going to delay the movie to give him an ass.
And then all of a sudden, boom, you know?
Famed ass evaluator Lon Jindeman here.
I'm not an ass evaluator, but the internet, again, James.
I said Lon Jindeman, sir. You've insisted that's a different... You have walked into the trap.
It's like... Listen, people. I am not a crook. I am not Lon Jindeman, all right? I'm saying that with two victory signs in the air as I say this.
Podcasting is a visual medium.
It is. So, yeah.
I like that we're now 15 minutes in. We finally talked about the Mario trailer, and the first thing we said is, God, Mario's... God, motherfucker needs to do some squats.
No, hey, I know, like, I'm really putting my neck out there, but I don't think they're going to delay the movie to add his ass to the movie.
They can do anything with CGI these days, yo.
It's too bad. Yeah, like, it's not going to follow the Sonic route of, make them work extra hard, the visual effect artists, and then, like, fire them all before Christmas, because this movie is coming out in April. So
okay, well, but what if it came out in May, and he had that thick butt? Like, I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Like, it's apparently this is important to some people on this podcast.
It's not me, it's the internet.
It's the very first thing
it's
you mentioned.
It's
topic. Everywhere.
I don't make up
these
hot topics.
Yeah, it's everywhere on the internet, I gotta defend John
what
here.
Parts of
yes. Absolutely.
The main part, the one I'm looking at? I don't know.
You curate your own social media feed, gentlemen. You're telling on yourselves right now.
Well, if I mostly follow, people who listen to the podcast or who found me through the podcast, and so that's
you listen to people who think we do a good job.
Don't blame me.
Our listeners want this,
right? Don't blame me if we're more in touch with our audience than you are, James. I mean, I know you're on you're in your ivory tower there.
I knew the ivory tower was coming.
Sorry, I only listen to the Economist and the New York Sunday editions take on the Mario trailer.
Yeah,
and they thought it was a tour de force, which is what they say about everything.
I don't know. I think David Brooks said that he didn't have an ass either.
David Brooks has enough ass for him.
For all of us, I know.
Anyways.
That joke's going to play for like four people.
I'm usually lucky if I get myself. So, I mean, I'll take four all day long.
What are we even doing? So Mario and his no ass adventure trailer dropped.
Yeah, but I guess also Chris Pratt's voice.
Yeah,
right. Politics.
Well, before
it's
we
Chris
even
Pratt's
heard,
voice.
Like I had a bad feeling before we even saw the trailer because in that Nintendo Direct, quote unquote, we saw Chris Pratt introduce the movie. He was like looking for his words. He didn't know what to call Koopas and their shell creepers in the game in particular that he was talking about. People have pointed that out.
On lots of Koopas in the arcade.
Right. I've just got this image of the guys on the sidelines of college football games that are holding up the huge cards with like four different things on them. Like one of them has Koopas, one of them has Mario, and they're like pointing at it while he's doing the ostensibly candid, I've just come out of a can and I've got to record this thing for the Nintendo Direct.
He was like one typo away from like, I'm Chris Pratt?
Full burgundy. I'm Chris Pratt.
I thought
who else could he be? No one, clearly. I think we've established that at this point in his career. But that is the point, though. I mean, when you cast this man, you are casting this man. I think they just got what they wanted. It does seem like... I don't I've not seen that many Chris Pratt movies. Like, I could describe myself a particular fan, but like, think of Guardians of the Galaxy. It is just
they
like,
wrote
he's
that
just
role around him.
It's just a sort of everyman thing, isn't it? You know what I mean? Like, everyone else on Guardians of the Galaxy is some crazy thing. You know, some badass daughter of Thanos or a tree person, you know, and he's like the every guy. That's what he's, obviously, because he's a Hollywood every guy, he's still the handsome boy. But, right. You know, like, he's just like, he's a guy. That's his whole thing. Like, so, and Mario does have the everyman roots, right? Like, that's all I do. Oh, he's a carpenter, he's a plumber, or, you know, he's just a sort of guy, that's almost like a kind of self-insert character or something. And it's just that's the very much the route they've gone. So it's like, yes, he will have less personality than they came to give Mario over the years with the Charles Martinet voice and all that, which felt more like it was modeled on, you know, like classic cartoons, like Mickey Mouse stuff or something.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas this is just like, no, everything's going to be crazy around him, and he's just, you know, a guy reacting to it all like you are, you know? So right. It's not desperately exciting, but it is kind of, you can kind of see what they're going for, even though, again, I don't know how appealing it will be to me, but that's not really the point.
So it does appear to be an isekai, which, because they show him coming through the warp pipe and being stunned by mushrooms.
Hey,
all
what
around
is this
him.
Place?
Yeah, which it's a bummer that every time they produce Mario media, it's an isekai. Like the first movie was too. As much as you could say anything starring live action Bob Hoskins is an isekai, but we did that. That's fine. What's interesting though is the OVA that came out back in like 85, the anime.
Was that like a Captain N scenario, that one? Like where Mario and Luigi are like playing the game and they get sucked in?
Yes, it's the very first video game isekai in the world. Which makes sense because it was like 85 and nobody was getting sucked into Pong. But
isn't that the plot of Tron?
Yeah, basically.
Basically, but it's not an actual video game, I guess. It's like they're sucked into the computer.
Yeah, it's a computer world which has like games in it, but you have multiple games and bad programs and good programs and all sorts of things.
Oh, they're all bad. I'm just like, oh man, they're just gonna do the isekai thing. Okay, now he's in here, and then immediately he's like, let's go to the Mushroom Kingdom. It's like, oh man, Chris Pratt is Chris Pratt the fuck out of this role. I wonder if we're just going to, like, everybody else is going to give performance. Because, like, I was actually surprised by, well, we talked about the opening video, but Jack, I got his name now.
Yeah, Jack Black as Bowser, right?
Yeah, he
actually seemed pretty good. I thought Charlie Day was also pretty good as Toad.
Yeah. Yeah, like
and then they don't just sound like
Keegan Key.
Yeah, Charlie Day is Luigi.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Well, then that's actually even more impressive.
All we got was a scream. Yeah, that's Keegan.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really good.
But even the little intro video he did, like, he looked significantly less narcoleptic and or high than his co-star.
Yeah, like there's this guy I follow on Twitter who said, like, forget believing Chris Pratt as Mario. I don't believe his performance as a Mario fan.
I don't believe him as a human.
No, it was not that believable in itself. that's your profession, so I suppose, you know, you'd like to think you could, even if it isn't genuine, you could do a better job of selling it, but there it is.
It reminds me of, what was it, Kang and Kodor trying to pretend to be humans?
Go ahead, waste your vote. It's one of the great lines ever written, as far as I'm concerned, and it's always topical.
Kodos, excuse me.
Kang God and Kodos,
forbid,
yeah.
God forbid I get the aliens named wrong, who exist as a framing device. I don't know, the whole presentation around this, I was just getting more and more hyped up as the direct went on, because I was like, yes, just keep stalling. Because it really felt like they just wanted to drag this fucking thing out.
Yeah, like, yeah, they did. It's like, well, here's Miyamoto. Now he's going to hand off to the Illumination exec. And he's going to talk for a bit. And now we're going to hand back to Miyamoto. And we're going to hand to Chris Pratt and then to Jack Black. And then back to Miyamoto. So, yeah, they milked it a fair bit. Well, not arguably as much as I might have thought. I thought they might, like, go a bit too far. But it just about kind of cut to the chase before it would have got really too much.
Guillaume mentioned in the end WR Discord, like the idea of them going with, of him going out there and trying to sell Mario Run, and God, that'd have been amazing. I would have just been howling at that point.
Oh, this is because of the Pikmin Bloom thing, yeah. Isn't it?
Yeah. It'd been funnier than anything that movie will have in it.
This is just what Miyamoto does now. It's just, you know, it's just Trojan horses, everything.
Oh, I can't wait for him to introduce a Fire Emblem product. But let me show you my wife who's in Fire Emblem Heroes. And she starts pulling up summer beach time Easter attire. Oh my God. Please, I'm begging for all your summer Easters. I guess we should talk about the trailer then.
Yeah, it wasn't too much. I guess it was mostly just like in befitting the way they did intro in it. It was basically we have a Bowser scene, we have a Mario scene, and then some glimpses, and that was it.
Yeah, and we got to see. I'm looking at the Twitter curated feed because this is the one where people pay to get featured. And like there are people on here who aren't being, they're influencers, but they're pre-selected. But then you see stuff like Hollywood Reporter as the first one on the trend, and it's like nobody fucking wants to see the Hollywood Reporter's take on this.
Yeah, exactly. What does Variety have to say about? Oh, come on, really?
Variety has to say we've laid off more of our writers. I'm sorry. The Hollywood Reporter quote teaser also features a look at Luigi in what appears to be a reference to Luigi's Mansion because he's closing a big dark door behind him and holding it. It's like, okay, did that need to be its own fucking headline? Did it?
Especially with that voice inflection, it's getting dangerously close to Kent Brockman saying Simpson scandal update, Homer sleeps in oxygen tent, he believes gives him sexual powers.
Prove that it doesn't, Greg. Oh, wait, but my science says yes. It's hilarious that I think part of it is just hilarious looking at the coverage of what is literally 2 minutes and 26 seconds of mostly establishing shots. And one really the only action sequences we got was Bowser and Co. show up to a penguin kingdom, nondescript penguin kingdom. And we have a moment of a visual joke about penguins using snowballs to fight and then Bowser not using snowballs to fight. And then, as was mentioned, a joke about don't eat that mushroom, you'll die. Oh, actually, never mind. It's fine. That's it. Like, that's the whole trailer. We saw a bunch of establishing shots.
Yeah. No, they definitely, as because it is still, as you said, April next year, we've got quite a lot of months to go. You've got to leave yourself somewhere, you know, for the next trailer to feel like it's more of a, you know, you didn't see Peach in the trailer, for instance, who's going to be an extremely important character, you know, just a tiny glimpse of Luigi. Like, yeah, they've got to leave the meat on the bone for this one. It was just that first glimpse.
And we'll see Luigi. I mean, we'll see Peach and Co. anytime now because Mario's design leaked a couple days ahead of time because of a McDonald's cross promotion. Like, we've talked about this with like the Mario and Rabbids. There's too many people involved for the shit not to leak.
Especially as it gets closer to the release date, there's just the more and more promotional partners that'll be out there. I mean, on the subject of the design, it's kind of, or designs in general, they've kind of, they're slightly off model, you know what I mean? Because they have got so strictly like right down, you know, just like this is exactly what each and every character looks like over the past, you know, 20 some odd years, basically, you know, since they started doing the kind of pre-rendered versions of the character designs in the N64 generation, like they, some of those and how they translated to polygonal models, like varied quite a bit, you know, and then eventually they just kind of nailed it all the way down. Like, this is the way these characters look. They will always look this way. And even just like in, you know, the main games, a lot of the time, like art style variations, you know, I mean, like, if it didn't necessarily have to have like four new Super Mario Brothers games that all have the same name and they have the same art style virtually, with some occasional flourishes for, you know, Van Gogh or whatever. But, you know, like, it is weird to see them sort of a little bit different, but they're not that different. You know, they're just kind of, you know, there's nothing crazy like the original Sonic movie thing, which everybody revolted against. It's just, you know, kind of subtle, like almost a little bit indefinable. I'm sure if you really looked at it for a longer period of time, you could define the ways in which they're different, maybe with proportions or, you know, this sort of that and the other. But just at the first blush, it's kind of like, yeah, it's almost the same, but not quite.
Apparently, everyone was concerned about his glutes being off model. I was more concerned about what's up here and not down there, John.
You're classy, I tell you. You know,
that's how
you're a gentleman when it comes to Mario. Yeah, exactly. James.
That's exactly. What I will say, Jesus. What I will say is that his probably as a concession to making it so you can model his mouth as he's talking, which isn't really a concern for Mario in a game. His face does have to have more elasticity in it, so like sometimes his face looked really weird and wide off model. Probably because they wanted to, you know, on a screen, you have to have big motions, or you're gonna subtlety is not something you really show on a movie screen that's, you know, 3D, because this is a 3D movie. On a IMAX 3D screen, subtlety is lost. So big, wide animations of his mouth and stuff. So that first image that leaked, his mouth was open. So it looked like he had been stung in both cheeks by a hornet, and he was very allergic.
What you were talking about there, does this mean that Nicolas Cage was under the impression that every film he was ever in was in 3D IMAX and all that?
Yeah, Raising Arizona definitely was shot in 3D.
Vampire's Kiss seems unlikely that that was like a 3D IMAX movie, but his performance is big enough to fill several multiplexes.
I actually saw Book of Secrets relatively recently, and
the second National Treasure?
I regret it, but also like there is something about moments where it's like just in case you need a reminder, this man's a Coppola. Just in case you've forgotten, he very much is one of that family. And yet here he is screaming at a desk because he thinks it has a secret inside of it.
He is, like, right. The thing is, just related to the people that directed like Apocalypse Now and The Virgin Suicides, and then like here's Con Air.
Yeah, I mean, they're basically the same film. I would like to see a Coppola directed Con Air. That's actually
no. You can't have anybody. That was Michael Bay, right? That had to be. No, it was. It was Simon West, actually. He's a British chap. Who ended up directed the first Expendables movie, I think, as well, actually. But I think it was a Bruckheimer production, though. So
a beautiful, subtle film about men aging into their senior years and finding purpose for their life past their first career. Yeah, it seems like right up Sofia Coppola's street.
Yep.
Expendables 4.
No, that fourth movie isn't going to make itself, but we still need it to happen. Look at your poor old Kelsey Grammer. I mean, he did the third one, and then, you know, he's so bereft that he couldn't do the fourth one that he's doing Money Plane now or whatever. So, I mean, we're all poorer for that.
Money Plane. his last name is literally Grouch in that movie. And you would think, well, obviously, if you're a villain whose last name is Grouch, you don't need a nickname. You're fucking Grouch, right? No, he's the Rumble. It's like, why does he need a nickname? His name is Grouch. Money Plane's amazing. Money Plane is truly a film for all ages. And by that, I mean all eras of time. You know, I think it would have done great in the 13th century. Truly, they would have been all about this plot about stealing crypto from an airplane that's also a death casino. Yeah, I think that also needs the Coppola touch, is what we're saying here. So yeah, Sofia Coppola brings you Mario, Super Mario the movie. With Mario's...
Yeah, I guess this means that it is just going to be called the Super Mario Brothers movie. Like, they're not... I was wondering whether that was kind of a placeholder, and maybe, you know, they might, like, have a subtitle or something snappier. but it just seems like that's it. It's very direct, matter of fact.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you would call the... I guess that leaves you the possibility, though, of spicing up a sequel's title, like with the subtitle. You could put something on there afterwards. I mean, it's like Super Mario Land. Super Mario Land 2, 6 golden coins. Like, you can throw a subtitle on there and be fine, and it'll be okay. I guess they felt like they didn't really need to do anything flashy with the title, because it's a Mario movie. It'll be fine. It'll do well. As long as they don't go... I mean... As long as they don't go out there and, like, Dennis Hopper it for some unfathomable reason, yeah, we're fine. It's going to do okay. I was trying to think of who would be the stunt casting for Bowser that would have sent me to the moon. And if you put it back in that era when that movie came out, I think the right one would have been Terry Bollea as Bowser. It would have been A-plus material. I'm surprised nothing for John on that one.
I'm just thinking about it. I'm just thinking about what that would sound like.
Hey, brother.
Hey. I'm churning it over in my mind.
I'm here to see.
Well, let me tell you something, Mario. I got all the power of the Mushroom Kingdom in these 24-inch pythons.
There it is. There it is.
Right.
They have to be, because Bowser's got big arms, unlike Mario here, apparently. So they had to be like, these 72-inch pythons.
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. I'm just saying, like, we could stunt, they should have stunt cast more people, is what I'm saying. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, I mean, they already had, on the Super Mario Brothers Super Show, they already had Lou Albano as Mario.
There you go. I have to go to, like, Cage Match and see if they ever had a match together. They must have.
What,
at some point.
Hulk Hogan and Lou Albano?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I mean, whether they had a match versus each other, I don't know. But, I mean, they were definitely there at the first WrestleMania, right?
That's true. Yeah.
So
they're slightly different generations, so maybe not.
Right.
But
yeah.
I did confirm that, yes, I wasn't wrong. There is an episode of King of the Hill called Hank's Backstory, which is the 103rd episode, and it's about the fact that the doctor tells him that Hank literally has no ass and therefore can't ride his riding mower anymore.
Another confirmation that 103rd episodes are cursed.
Yeah.
It's actually
right.
A really good episode. There's a significant amount of time spent on prosthetic butts that he could wear so he can ride his lawnmower in a race against Dale.
Maybe he can, you know, give Mario some pointers. Maybe they can have a crossover. You know,
maybe in this, you know, rather than like growing when he has a super mushroom, that's what it replenishes it.
That's exactly it.
That's his health indicator.
His butt is just going to grow. He's going to eat a mushroom and his butt is going to grow.
Oh my God. There's going to be photoshops of him with just fucking two hams stuffed in his pants by the end of this podcast.
But the good thing is, I mean, there's a whole kind of cottage industry to be made out of pulling excerpts from Chris Pratt's other movies and throwing them into Mario videos.
That's true.
It's seamless.
It's exactly seamless. It's just one for one. Just move it right over.
Oh, I literally just got an ad from Prime reminding me that there's 25 Bond films available to me right now.
Man, oh, turn off your Alexa. Turn the mic off.
No, thank you, sir. Pass.
It's too easy to order from Amazon with Alexa on. I enjoy
Alexa
the convenience.
All
privacy be damned.
all the Bond films and prosthetic butts so I can ride my lawnmower, please. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, it looks like a lot of money was spent on this movie.
Yeah, it looks like, expensive. Certainly, the cast probably cost them a grip. So.
Oh yeah. It's definitely got more. I don't know. The penguin scene was kind of amusing.
Just the sort of scale of it. You know, you've got the sort of floating Bowser, not like an airship, but just more like a floating magma, like not a continent, but, you know, some sort of island sized thing, just pouring magma, and they set it down, and he's got all his hordes out there, like they're about to siege Minas Tirith or something, but it turns out it's just penguins. With snowballs that are ill-equipped to go up against this force, and then he just goes in there and nabs a star. So that he's the power star seems like it might be, especially with Peach's castle featuring with the Mario 64, pretty much the Mario 64 design, which they've carried forward plenty over the years. It seems like the Mario 64 could be one of the key kind of touchstones, to the extent that there will be any, for kind of the concept of a general scenario.
Yeah, I think that makes the most sense. And then I guess that means they have to create other people who have stars to make it so they can, oh, he's getting all the stars, we need to get ourselves ready. Which implies there's probably not that significantly less stars than there were in Mario 64.
I don't think he's gonna find all 120.
I think it's going to be a 7-film series where he's going to find all 120, yes.
Well, wait.
Many
till
of
find
them
out.
From, blue coins or red coins,
It's kind of like, the sort of slide race set piece was okay the first time, but did we really need to do it again but quicker to get another star? That was, go into the well once too many times.
So I can't wait for the sequel where he has to go clean up a fucking beach to get a shine for 30 minutes or however fucking long that takes.
The Manta Ray thing gets referenced in Splatoon 3. They've not forgotten. So they're not ashamed of it. You might think they should be, but they're not.
I mean, I know they should be.
But yeah, The trailer that got me, I thought that the penguins were actually going to kick ass. Like, I was like, go slide into them. That's going to show them. And then that didn't happen. And I was disappointed.
No, they failed. Failed utterly.
The timing, the pacing was a little bit off, but it's still a teaser. It's not the final edit, I assume. So,
the Magikoo perceived it was like quite powerful compared to what we're used to them doing, isn't it? True. It could be irritating, they make a block disappear or turn into an enemy, but it just made all the penguins levitate all at once. I mean, that's some serious power.
What can Mario do against that?
And when he gets dropped, he's got nothing to cushion his fall, has he? So, I mean, it's game over right there.
It's a big problem, yeah.
We did get an answer to last week's email, because the Koopas are definitely showing some minion-esque behavior in the scene that we got, where one of them's wearing their helmet wrong, one's like recessed into his shell out of fear of Bowser,
I like the minion quality of expressing an emotion and getting dressed. Good call, James. Well observed,
sir. That's not supportive behavior we foster here.
Things got real spicy all of a sudden. Wow.
They are going to be like weird, goofy background characters that do, because that's like in that first movie, that first Minions movie, they're not so front and center as they become. They're much more backgroundy comic relief. And so they could have just been generic and standing there as soldiers, but they're all doing weird stuff. So, and they seem to spend at least a little bit of time on the trailer, like showing them doing stuff. So I suspect we'll get a lot of weird comedy cuts of them reacting in stupid ways, or being less than what you would describe as the most proficient soldiers.
Possibly even being thrown at or kicked at other enemies.
That might happen. Maybe drunk lying down in marshalling yards. Oh, wait, that was a different thing.
Oh, and they did mention in the section where the Illumination producer was speaking was the idea that the score is going to sort of, it was coordinated with Koji Kondo and will feature motifs from Mario history, which I don't believe the Alan Silvestri one from the 90s movie did at all. It just had this kind of like vaguely Italian kind of motif, I think, like, you know, kind of just like, well, they've got Italian heritage, so yeah, that's what I'll write for them. Not his best work, you know. It wasn't the Back to the Future score, let's put it that way.
It's funny because I watched Predator last week, and I think that Alan Silvestri might only have one soundtrack in him.
It's a fair point. I'd seen Predator on TV as a child, you know, bits and pieces of it, but it probably first time I really sort of saw it from start to finish was when DVDs were a novelty. You know, like it was like 2000 or something, and my friend was like building a DVD collection, and he had Predator, and we watched it. And it was just like, oh my God, like I'm expecting Christopher Lloyd to just show up at any minute.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
It is so similar to his work on Back to the Future, which was only like 2 years earlier. I think it was like really, really close, but
hey.
Yeah, there you go. I mean, it's effective. I think in, you know, if you've never heard Back to the Future, but if you have, which obviously most people have, because it was an insanely popular movie.
Right.
Like, it just, like, you can't help but be like, no.
If you can't rip off you, who can?
Yeah.
Sometimes
I do think, you know, it's the, like, directors and producers are somewhat to blame, because they're like, they hired you to do you, much like the you know, Nintendo, like, and Illumination have hired Chris Pratt to do Chris Pratt. Like, yeah, this is what they want from you, so goodbye gum, I'm going to give it to you. You know?
We make this joke about Sakuraba all the time. It's like, the only time when he's not doing Sakuraba is when we're pretty much convinced someone's hidden all the electric guitars. And he's just wandering around the BAMCO office, is lost and confused. Like, you're right. People have a thing, and like, we're going to hire them to do that. Even composers that we like and we don't make fun of for sameness. Like, there's a reason they keep hiring the same people to do the Xenoblade compositions, because they want them to keep producing those kinds of compositions.
Yeah, no, exactly. Just keep. But it doesn't mean they can't do other things. Either, right. You know, sometimes, you know, when you get kind of, right, this is the musical equivalent of being typecast, you know, that's just that, then it can seem that way, you know, but, you know, John Williams didn't only do Star Wars, it's type stuff, or Indiana Jones type stuff, channeling 30 serials, you know, you think about The Deer Hunter or Schindler's List, or, you know, all these sorts of, I think, a sort of psychological horror film called Images from the 70s, you know, very, very different. But no one will generally think of those when they think of John Williams.
Right. I mean, it's Mitsuda is a great example of that. He's done a lot of stuff, but when he made the line talking about Xenoblade 2, it was like, this is the first time I got to work with an Irish choir. We were all like, bullshit. Absolute liar bullshit, because that's what we immediately assume when you are attached to
I think it was on a game, right? Because he'd worked with them or done things with them or, you know, like that, you know, for like concerts and stuff. So it was like, now I get to do it in a game.
It's like, sir, we've heard your compositions. We know better. You're not fooling anyone here. This asshole's out here going, I want this very specific.
This is the first time ever that I've been able to have dueling flute solos at this particular time of day, on this day of the week. So just flutes, give me a break, all right?
Flutes that I specifically requisitioned Nintendo create for me for the purposes of these compositions. What an absolute just power play of like, no, I want custom instruments. No, not like custom paint, custom pitches. Like, what an absolute move of just asserting dominance over your employer. create new music, new musical instruments for me specifically. Thank you. It was a teaser trailer. They also played it at Comic-Con, at the same time as the Direct. So we had this weird, like, hello, Comic-Con. Hello, Nintendo Direct, which is the funniest line in the fucking world to me for some reason. The idea that Chris Menendry looked at the camera and said, hello, Comic-Con, which is normal. They always do that when they're revealing a trailer at Comic-Con. But then that he looked and greeted the Nintendo Direct as if that was the audience and not just like a channel.
It's our collective name.
Yeah. I guess everybody who watches it is part of the Nintendo Direct.
We're all part of the Borg or whatever, yeah.
Would you prefer the Nintendo Direct universe?
I was about to ask, does this mean we're all part of the universe?
You know it does. I mean, I consider myself part of the Nintendo Direct universe.
Great. What's the sports entertainment equivalent here?
I don't know, but I'm a Nintendo Direct superstar, I can tell you that.
Jesus fucking Christ. All right, do we have anything else we want to say, or are we good? Are we spent?
Between this week and last week, I think it's plenty.
Free Mario's ass, that's all I have to say.
From what? From his pants?
Yes.
Are you explicitly asking for Mario to moon the camera in this film?
I'm just saying, you know, that...
I'll tell you what, if Joe Buck hears about this, he won't be very happy, will he? Even if a man mimes pulling his pants down, he thinks it's the worst thing that's ever been perpetrated by man. So, I don't think we could get behind that.
Lunar eclipse over the Mushroom Kingdom is what John Lindemann is looking for.
Between people being fixated with Mario's nipples in Super Mario Galaxy Odyssey people are more horny for Mario than I thought they would be.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it?
Just say you want to fuck Mario.
We've already established that Mario fucks. We've talked about this on this podcast.
We've completely talked about it.
But yes, it has absolutely been referenced.
It just goes to show we've established it.
There's a horniness around Mario out there. It's undeniable.
That's the point. What's the Hannibal Lecter line about, like, you covet what you see every day or whatever? Like, basically, which is how they catch Buffalo Bill at the end. Like, one of the victims is one that's actually, like he lives near them or something. Like, it's just, like, apparently, even a character that has had any possible kind of sex appeal surgically removed, people will still project it onto him because they see it a lot. So there it is. It's a depressing, crushing inevitability of horniness.
So you mean like Pilot Wing 64?
It's very exquisitely circular,
man. It all comes
James.
Back around, doesn't it?
Take a bow.
There we go. All right. Well, I think we're gonna wrap this segment up, and when we come back, we're gonna be significantly less horny and do some new business.
What are we gonna do during that break? It's the internet, all right?
What are you implying?
Yeah, okay.
We're cold showers. Everybody go hit the showers, and when we come back,
the internet, much like Soylent Green, is people, John. Unfortunately,
that sort
of obfuscation doesn't wash.
You know, every sci-fi film has been about how we will make the instruments of our own destruction, but nobody ever thought it's just
dumber than they thought. You know, we had the general arc right, but just not how silly it is.
No, nobody thought it would be people fighting over whom they want the Onceler from the Lorax to have sex with. But here we are. Welcome to more horrible things that the Mario movie has resurfaced for the world. So,
Charlton Heston just screaming like, it's Russian bots! It's Russian bots!
No one's gonna believe you, Chuck! It doesn't matter, it's not gonna change anything!
And on that, I'm gonna go drink a fifth of vodka and lie down in a field, and when we come back, we're gonna do some new business. Stay tuned. Hello and welcome. No, we already did that. This is part two. I was thinking about the fact that we didn't do that and then just did it because I'm apparently just a podcast hosting robot at this point. That's just how it goes when you've been doing the show for this long.
Just cruising on autopilot.
Yeah. Well, so it's easy to get confused because that's Guillaume Veillette's voice you heard. We're going to do the introductions, apparently. We're going to be doing new business now.
I thought, what was it you said about surnames in the first segment? I can't even remember.
It only applied during the first segment.
That's okay. Right. I mean, you know.
Trends change, Greg. Trends move fast.
I don't feel sexy anymore, James.
Trends move.
it's too fast for me, certainly.
I'm very glad to hear that, John. Now last names are what it's all about. This is just Veillette.
Wow.
Which actually sounds like a wrestling name.
It's kind of sexy. Kind of a sexy name. You know? Veillette. You know? I could get with that.
You gotta be more smooth when you say it, though.
Right.
Yeah, like Veillette. Like you're talking about rocket belts.
I don't know. You know?
Nope, that's not where it's not. That's the absolute opposite of what I wanted, John. Completely the wrong direction.
Yeah. I can't say that anyone's ever called my name sexy, but until now.
It's that weird thing of like, well, when it's not a name from your language or an accent that is normal to you, it's, oh, that's sexy. And then like, no, actually, I speak like gutter trash in my country. People think I'm like from the dirt farmers. It's like, oh, I see. I just thought French accents were all this. No, they're all different. So that's what it is. So John is apparently very interested in Veillette. So that's what you gotta like. If it doesn't sound like you like raised your eyebrows twice saying it, did you really say it? Anyway, new business.
I'm gonna
answer an email from last week, which was, why don't y'all talk about visual novels? And I already answered that email, but now I'm gonna talk about a visual novel, and you're gonna see why. So I have a reviewing a visual novel. It's pretty short, which is why I picked it up, called Light Crave. It is the third visual novel in this series, but the PR insists...
It's called Light Crave?
LightKrave, I believe, is Light Cravate. Look, they made up words.
Light Cravat?
K-R-A-V-T-E. How do you pronounce V-T-E? Viti?
Veillette.
There you go. Yeah. Like Veillette. You nailed it. Perfect. So this is I think the full name is Fault-STP-Light-Veillette, apparently. It is the third entry in the Fault series. I'm not even kidding. Like this is why we don't talk about visual novels, because now I have to explain what the Fault series is, and I can't. But the PR material insisted this can be a good starting point for anybody who's new to the franchise. So I'm going to review it, assuming it is, because they told us it was. Now it's their fault if this is actually a terrible starting point. Red flag, this might not be the best starting point. One of the first, when you boot the game up, the only options available to you are new game or options and dictionary. And the dictionary is nothing but a long alphabetized list of lore that it probably assumes you already know. So possible red flag. I've been at it for a couple hours now. And what does at it mean in this context? It literally means nothing but reading. I have made no meaningful choices. I have taken no action. I've enjoyed some pretty decent music and some kind of nicely animated characters as they're sort of delivering the story, and the backgrounds are very nice. But literally all we've done is setting the scene. And this game, this universe, is absolutely overly obsessed in having lore. And when I say it's lore, what do I mean? Let's talk about the magic types. And they just literally drop a proper noun that's spelled with the same kind of love of language that brings you a game called LightKrave. And it's like, then you can see it's underlined. So if you tap it with the finger on the touchscreen, it'll take you to the encyclopedia entry for that proper noun, which is, it's like, oh, this is one of the six types of magic this type requires that comes from humans. This type requires that you are blessed in order to be able. It's like, oh my God, this, I'm going to get buried under lore in this game, aren't I? So we've got lore around the government politics about what jobs you're allowed to hold and where you're allowed to work and who answers to whom and layers of the it's like just absolutely drenched in it. Have I made any meaningful decisions? I've made no decisions. Have I gained much from the story? No, I've met my main character and consumed a tremendous amount of stuff about the world that he lives in and that he wants to be a painter because he likes women, which, okay, honestly, that's probably true for about a third of Renaissance painters. So, like, I'm not going to judge him on that. All the game seems to think I should. And he works on a fruit farm. And there's a big dumb war far away in the country that he's in, and all of their allies are sending resources to one side in the war. And I'm like, when was this written? Not when you would think based on that information. And yeah, it's like, okay, I'm just reading this and I'm like, it's fine. I'm, you know, it's still early. I'm getting somewhere now. Like the plot is started to move, as it were. But I mean, the first hour was literally nothing but just established characters, established world, established lore, established like all this stuff, all these proper nouns, all these things. And so, yeah, if you were looking for, you know, like me to give you a meaningful conversation about what this thing is, brother, I can't. I got nothing for it. This is one of the most difficult things to talk about that I've ever had on this show. And that's saying a lot, because last time I did New Business, I talked about a game that I literally could not interact with twice. So yeah, that's where we're at. I got nothing. So the question of why don't we talk about visual novels? This is the reason. When I'm further in, when I've cleared it, because it's not that long, like, I'll be able to at least give an opinion on it and, like, hey, this is how I feel about it and that kind of stuff. But in terms of, you know, preserving what makes these things interesting, what makes them valuable, what gives them their heft, you know, I'm not going to talk about it. So it's going to be, I'll probably mention it again just to kind of give thoughts on where it landed on this imaginary rubric I have in my head where I evaluate one visual novel against another. But fundamentally, yeah, this is why we don't do it. It's only interesting insofar as its relevancy to the fact we just did an email on it. So yeah, otherwise I probably would have skipped it. But so hey, now
I managed to bing this, and yeah, I guess like maybe it's meant to be like light craft, but with a V instead of an F, and an E at the end.
With a V? Yeah. Light craft.
I guess, yeah. But because like the first results that I get is the soundtrack basically, and yeah, for some reason it says like Lightcraft Songcraft captures partial OST, and
sure,
yeah, so some bangers here like They Draw, We Shoot,
yeah, or no, they do that
Golden Hour, Dodge and Burn. Wow. What was the point of dodging then? I don't know.
Well, I mean, maybe you're going to dodge and then you're going to burn them.
Hmm. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
So, right, like when I say like nothing is happening so far, right now, that we found out that a few of the young adults in town have a secret spot in the woods where they've built a clubhouse, and like they're all between like 16 to 20, you know. They're not adolescents anymore, but they're still not adults.
I'm wondering if I'm seeing some spoilers here, because the main character seems to have some sort of affliction or needs a shower. I'm not sure.
I mean, maybe
he's got some gunk on his forearms. Look like it could be like some sort of
plot, you know, gunk.
Illness, but it could also just be paint, I suppose.
Could be. Well, he's trying to be a painter, so maybe. Mm. But like, so far the events are one of them who happens to be a noble and do a side hustle as a bureaucrat has come by to tell them that, hey, there's been some bears spotted in the woods. You probably shouldn't be like grilling out here in the woods. It's dangerous. And them going, nah, we're going to keep doing that. And that's the dramatic events we've had happen so far. A dispute among friends about whether or not it's smart to grill in an area where bears have recently been spotted.
Hmm.
Yeah, this is peak excitement. Which, by the way, this happens in my neighborhood like every other year when black bears are spotted coming out of the park. And it's like, hey, keep your cats indoors. Like, that's basically what it comes down to. This is the equivalent of when we get an email from the city saying, hey, if you have a cat, you should probably keep him inside for a little while. Just a heads up. So, yeah, that's where we're at. So, yes, this is why we don't talk about visual novels. I yield the balance of my time. Keon, what are you up to?
Yeah, so I finished Doom 64. It was about time that I finished Doom 64. I think, maybe that was a lot of Doom in too short a period of time.
Is this the last Doom for you for now?
For a bit, especially since 3, like, I might start it, but I'm a wuss. I don't like scary games. I don't like, you know, that's a game where they pivoted, like, they decided, like, yeah, you're gonna have a flashlight that, keeps, the battery goes away pretty quickly, and so you can't shoot and have the flashlight at the same time, which seems a little bit stupid. Just tape that fucking flashlight to your gun.
I remember the duct tape mods.
Mm. Yeah, there is a some sort of cheat that I can use to have the flashlight always on, maybe I'll consider it. But we'll see.
There were mods to add duct tape to this flashlight so it was stuck to your gun. And then there were mods that turned the flashlight into like those projector flashlights that kids have where it would like project. So there'd be like anime girl face flashlight mods, which I thought created some really, truly hilarious screenshots of like somebody fighting a hell demon. And there's just like this anime girl being like flashed onto it.
Is there a mod where it turns the flashlight into that toy flashlight from Ghostbusters, you know, that just projects the face of the marshmallow guy?
I hope so. Okay. Honestly, there should be.
Yeah. It's the kind of thing I would expect to have been made into a mod by now. But anyway, like, so we'll see if I actually get around to Doom 3. It's funny because I'm kind of exhausted after playing Doom 64, but I'm still kind of craving that kind of old school FPS. And if I had a way to play Dark Forces, Star Wars on the on something modern, I think I would do it. You know,
isn't it on GOG?
Yeah, but I specifically on console. I'm like, for some reason, I'm not able to play games on PC anymore. It's completely uninteresting to me. I just can't sit in front of a PC after sitting in front of a PC for 8-9 hours working.
That's fair.
So, but yeah, so I finished Doom 64. It was fun, but that thing, like that bit I described at the beginning of the game where like you activate machinery that ends up kind of breaking the ground, and that's really, really cool. That happens exactly once in the game. And after that, it's very much like, yep, this is your standard Doom. Eventually you kind of get over the nicer looking sprites for the enemies. And all you're left with is mostly, you know, kind of like not all that innovative, Doom levels. So that's a little bit disappointing. Also, Doom 1 and 2 were very careful usually about hiding the enemies in closets, you know, like in places in the levels where, okay, like you activate something or step on something, a wall just disappears and like these enemies are behind it and they start attacking you. And Doom 64 is a little bit more lazy about it. And sometimes like a new batch of enemies will just kind of slowly apparate, will appear onto, is apparate something from like Harry Potter?
Anyway, I have no idea.
They slowly appear into the level, and it's like, okay, more enemies. And so you fight them, and then that's it. It's not
You're never truly alone.
Yeah. So it kind of, but it becomes like kind of this cheap trick after a while that you're like, okay, I guess we're doing this again. And you see it coming, so it's not super surprising or effective. Like, it's not scary or anything. But overall, it was like it was good. The last boss, though, like I had to look up a video of someone beating it, and I think I was facing something different. Because in Doom 64, there are these, you know, hidden secret exits in some of the levels that you kind of have to find if you want to power up this new weapon that they put in Doom 64. The only new weapon that's not in Doom 1 and 2. And you want to power that up because it's really the only thing that's going to let you finish off the last boss. And also because you're also looking for these keys that will allow you to turn off teleporters that otherwise, before facing that last boss, you're going to also be facing wave after wave of demons coming out of these three teleporters. I didn't find any of those secret exits. I didn't find any of those keys that would turn off a teleporter. I didn't find any upgrades for that new gun. And I was really struggling against this final boss that was sending these... it shoots these things directly at you. Like, it's kind of like this three-way shot that kind of propels you in the air if you touch it, or if it touches you. And at the same time, it just sends, like, to the left or the right, and the right of it, kind of shoots off to its sides, basically, like, these seeker missiles. And these missiles are faster than you can run. So it becomes, like, it's way too much to dodge. And I don't know how people do it otherwise, but I saw, like, this video of this guy beating the boss, and I didn't see the seeker missiles coming out of it, so I'm not sure what the difference was there. It looked like maybe he managed, like, he was so good at the game that he managed to stall the demon, you know, with his shotgun before it could shoot these seeker missiles, but I was not that good. And so I would die very, very quickly. And that's one thing in Doom 64. Like, it seems like everything damages you so much faster than in the other two Doom games. I was not enjoying that very much. Like, I ended up saving and loading my game very often just because one mistake would be very, very costly. And yeah, like, against that final boss, against that barrage of seeker missiles, I was just, this is kind of pointless. I can't do anything. So what I did was the original game on the N64 had a password system. I guess if you didn't have a memory card for it, you could use the password to start from the last level that you were at. And also, like, it does retain the stuff that you've found, I suppose. I got myself, I found myself online a password to start at the last boss with those keys that would turn off the teleporters, and with, like, all the upgrades for that gun. And it was over very, very quick. It made the almost impossible, seemingly impossible boss battle kind of trivial. So, I don't know. Maybe there was, like, a happy medium there, but I did not bother to find it.
Hey, the demons of hell don't worry about how much challenge you put up, so...
No, that's true. That's true. Yeah, I should... I've protected Earth. I should be happy with that.
Yeah.
Should be enough, Gil.
I mean, how many people can claim that?
I don't know. How much did the Doom 64 sell?
It was a huge hit, so probably, like... 400,000.
Right. Yeah. It's all, anyway, at least it was not to Doom You or something.
That would have been a really good name for a game, though.
You're fighting your way through a university in hell. That'd be great.
I was just thinking it was more like Doom You.
Right.
And so that you actually go into hell rather, like, than hell coming out on Mars.
So is it like the hell is actually inside yourself kind of thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can believe it.
I'm just saying, if I had played a Doom game exclusive to the Wii U, I would have been, you know, part of a much more select few than
you would.
The
you would have been
Doom
one
64.
Of. You'd have been one of one.
Yeah, yeah, basically. But yeah, so I don't know. Like, I don't regret playing it. It was fun. It's just I'm a little bit burnt out right now, so I'm gonna find something else to play.
Such as.
Karen and I have been playing Return to Monkey Island. So after we finished LeChuck's Revenge, the second Monkey Island game, we skipped all the other games that came after that were not made by Ron Gilbert and Dave Grossman. Like that series got, kind of was taken over by different directors, different people after Ron Gilbert left LucasArts. So, yeah, so we've played LeChuck's Revenge, then we went directly to Return to Monkey Island, and oh my god, it's so much more newer. It's so much, like, it's basically the same reaction I had when I played Baldur's Gate Dark Alliance 2. Like, I had this shock of, like, oh my god, this game is so old. And LeChuck's Revenge was like, oh my god, this game is so old. They really don't make them like this anymore. And then I played the newer game, and I'm like, yes. As one could probably have guessed, all the stuff that annoyed me about a 30-year-old game are gone, because games are not made like that anymore. And thank god. So Return to Monkey Island is pretty much like the way that it starts. I don't really want to spoil anything, but if you've played Monkey Island games before, you're not going to be like, you're going to find it pretty funny, and like, you're going to see familiar stuff, let's say. But if you haven't played any of them before, like, you might be initially a little bit confused, but the game does a good job of catching you up to what the deal is, what the story is, who Guybrush is. And I'm glad in the end that we played the Chuck's Revenge right before, because it kind of picks up right after that in a way. I don't want to say too much, but it, like, while all the stuff that happens in Curse of Monkey Island, Tales of Monkey Island, and like all the I can't remember the Grim Fandango Engine one, what it was called, but all of that, supposedly, like, it all happened, it's all taken into account, but it does refer back to the first Monkey Island and LeChuck's Revenge a lot. So I'm really glad that we played it, but that we played both of those. But it's not a requirement. The puzzles are not nonsensical, which is a plus. You don't need to know a special kind of LucasArts game designer logic to solve anything in this game, at least on the kind of the easy difficulty, which is what we chose. There is a hard difficulty that you can choose for the puzzles, and basically you're going to get mostly, from what I understand, you're going to get mostly the same experience as if you play with the easy puzzles, except you're going to have more hoops to jump through. The puzzles will come with more steps to them. So we're playing on easy, which is a great way to kind of move through the story without too many hitches. You know, it just, like, it keeps a good pace. And if your goal is to get through the story, get the jokes, etc., I would recommend it. Like, that's the pace that I want my adventure game to have. I don't want to be bogged down forever because I didn't think of using the banana and the metronome, or didn't think of looking into the gorilla envelope to find a banana in the first place. So if you are playing on easy, Return to Monkey Island, sometimes it's almost a little bit, not insulting, but like, sometimes you kind of feel like, oh yeah, like, this game decided that they were going to solve this puzzle for me, because the thing that I'm looking for is just laying around and I can just pick it up. But for the most part, the puzzles still have a little bit of friction, still have a little bit of, you have to think about it to them, to not make it insulting. So I'm very much enjoying, the pacing of the game. The, I don't know, like the actors are really great. They're the actors that we're used to since these games have had voices. The guy who voices Guybrush is kind of fantastic. I'm not sure. I don't know. Like you've played these before, right, James? Monkey Island or?
A long time ago.
Right. So the game does have at the beginning a kind of a scrapbook, and before you do anything, the main menu highlights the scrapbook part of the options and tells you like, hey, if you need a refresher or if you've never played these games before, maybe look at this first. And then if you select that, it's basically Guybrush looking through a scrapbook and looking through old photos, old memories, and telling you the stories of the previous games. So it's a great way to just find out what happened before then. And then the you can start the game proper. And then like the game kind of eases you into how you solve puzzles, like with the, what you're going to be asked to do, in Return to Monkey Island. And that's the thing. Like I think that it will, improve your experience if you have played these games before, if you know the story, if you know the characters. You're going to get more references for sure. And you're probably going to be more into it just because, you know, you're following the adventures of characters that you've seen before. But, I would not, I don't think, recommend people necessarily to go back and play those old games because of the nonsensical puzzles that I mentioned. Like, it's not great. You're just going to end up looking through game facts, you know, following a walkthrough to figure out how to get through these games. And, the humor is dated, the game design is dated. So it's like, yeah, it's not required. Return to Monkey Island is a good starting point. It's not going to frustrate you. You still get the, what's good about puzzle games or about LucasArts games or Monkey Island games. Like you still get the jokes. You still get, except that they're more up to date. They're better written. They're better acted. You know, the game is prettier. So I've tried to find a few reviews from people who haven't played Monkey Island games yet, and like before Return to Monkey Island, and they seem to enjoy it. Like it's getting good reviews from both veterans and newcomers. So I say just go for it. If all you have is a Switch anyway, it's not like you have much of a choice. Like the only Monkey Island games that were in a Nintendo system before were the Tales of Monkey Island kind of chapters that were released on WiiWare by Telltale Games. So it's not like this franchise has a long history with the Nintendo gamers and anyway. And yeah, so I've been, so we're almost at the end. A lot of people, when it was first shown, were upset about the art style. I think that it works for me. It's different from the art style that, well, the thing is, like, the series never had a consistent art style to begin with. Maybe, like, the first two games looked the most, like each other. Yeah, like you wouldn't make those games look like that anymore. And then like the remakes when they were made, like they looked off to me in the first place. Karen was kind of like initially kind of put off by the art style of Return to Monkey Island. She was like, well, it doesn't look like what we just played. But that didn't upset me because yeah, like the LeChuck's Revenge, the special edition with the redrawn graphics were not what I was used to. You know, right. I started with Curse of Monkey Island. It was not that art style. So it's like, yeah, I don't mind. I think that they look pretty good. If there's one nitpick that I would have is that the style of animation that they chose for, animating the characters speaking, they have the heads kind of stretch in a way, you know, and like the top of their heads go up and down, and the speed at which the characters deliver their lines is usually pretty high, and that I find the stretching of the heads really distracting. It's a little bit like what's their names, Terrence and Philip in South Park.
Yes.
Yeah. It's kind of like that effect.
Oh, geez. A little bit.
You know, like not as bad and not as you know, they actually have like a face. Like it's not just an egg. You know, two halves of an egg. But anyway, like it is a little bit distracting. So I wish there was a way to tone that down a little bit, but other than that, I'm pretty happy with the way it looks. They really simplified the interface to make it to remove any kind of pain points that you might have in this type of game. You just control Guybrush with the stick, and then the other stick you can cycle through the various points of interest on the screen. If you've played old school point and click games before, sometimes you would do something called a pixel hunt. Now, if you're a Metroid Zero Mission, not Zero Mission, Metroid Other M player, you're familiar with this.
If you've ever had to hunt down pick rats in a Layton game, it's literally this process.
Right. So you would just like scan the screen very slowly, trying to highlight, like find the one point on the screen that you could interact with. And then you would throw everything at it. Like, okay, like I can do something with this stick. Can I pick it up? No. Can I, you know, put something on it? Can I use one of my items on it? Etc. It was sometimes very tedious. This game doesn't do that. Like Guybrush gets to, like you move him around the screen, and every time that he's close enough to something that he can interact with, you see a very unobtrusive little circle appear, and then you can use the right stick to highlight it. And then you usually get only the one choice. Like you press the A button to usually just look at it, or maybe do something with it, and sometimes you get another option mapped to the X button where, like, if you had the choice to look at it, then your other choice is going to be to do something more interactive with it, like to pick it up or to, yeah, do something to it.
I want to say that's how Thimbleweed did it, too.
Probably. It's been a while since I played it, although I thought that may be more verbs than that. But
It definitely had more verbs, but the idea of, like, hey, you're not going to pixel hunt.
Right.
I just don't think there's an audience that's going to tolerate the pixel hunt crap.
Right. And that's like, yeah, like those people have moved on to hidden objects games. they're
being advertised right now on your mother's Facebook feed.
Yeah, basically. So usually only like basically two things you can do, but the main verb, like the main interaction, like the look at thing usually, what's fun is that because now like they've removed all that clutter from the interface, like they can make that look at verb say anything. So it's not just like, you know, make Guybrush look at the sign, like make him ponder the sign, make him like wax nostalgic on this thing, like make him. So oftentimes like you highlight something and the text will tell you what that will do. But then, like, they hide a joke in that text, and then you actually press the button, and then you've got, like, another joke that Guybrush delivers. And so, like, there's a lot of fun stuff. There's a lot of jokes that they can, cram in there with that very simple interface. So I'm really, I appreciate that a lot. And it's funny because, you know, like, I'm playing Return to Monkey Island. Like, it feels very nostalgic. You're returning to Mele Island, the location of the first game. And it's like, oh yeah, I remember this. And like, like every time that there's a reference to something that happened in the first game. And the story is very much about Guybrush kind of feeling nostalgic about his first adventure. And I'm very eager. Like, that's the thing. Like, I was playing The Chuck's Revenge. I didn't know what the game was about. I don't know if it was saying much of anything, or maybe I just was not smart enough to like figure out what the theme was. But to me, the Chuck's Revenge theme was very much about hypnotizing monkeys to use them as wrenches. Like I did not really it's feel deep. That there was another theme behind that. But this game very much has something that it's saying about Guybrush and also about adventure game players and also about adventure game designers who are aging. So it's very interesting, and like it's very obvious at the beginning that, you know, Guybrush, like, he's looking at Stan's used vessels place, and you know, that's the location from the first game. That's where you bought your first your ship, the Sea Monkey, in the first game. Except that it's been closed down. There's no ships to be found because Stan is in jail. And yeah, like Guybrush is looking around and just like feeling nostalgic about the whole place, and like, ah, this place used to be filled with ships as far as the eye could see. And he's very, very clearly feeling nostalgic about that time. And you're, you know, as someone who's played the first Monkey Island, you know, you kind of think like, wait a minute, that place was a dump. Like he sold you a shitty boat. What are you talking about? You know, he's literally in jail right now for fraud. That's who Stan was. Like, he was not your friend. He, like, you've been had. Then, like, you know, like, you can kind of apply that to, in a way, to the experience of playing old adventure games, like going back to them and finding out that, wow, like, it sure was a lot of bullshit, you know? Like, yeah, sure, I'm feeling nostalgic and I know the answer to the puzzles because I've done them before. So it's like there's much less friction. But if I were to play these for the first time right now, like it's really not that enjoyable. Anyway, like basically kind of maybe like a statement of nostalgia and how it colors how you feel about things. It's interesting. Yeah, anyway, I'm not sure what else I have to say about this. Like, if you've played the previous games before, I highly recommend this. Like, it's really, again, like, it's a very nostalgic feeling.
It feels like it's for that audience specifically.
Yeah. But also, like, if you enjoy funny games, there's definitely more of those on the market today than there ever was. And especially, like, in the early 90s, that was not really a thing. Games that were like well written with jokes, and you know, like it was not. You got a few of those a year, maybe, and then the rest was like Leisure Suit Larry games that were never all that funny. But so now there's more of an offering, but still, like if I would recommend checking this out, it's really well done. You don't need to go back and play the previous games. Maybe like look at a you know, a Let's Play on YouTube. That will be enough. And definitely, like, look up the ending of the second game, The Chuck's Revenge, and then start this, and you'll be like, what the fuck?
So I haven't played this, obviously, so I can't speak to how important playing the other ones is, but I'm still going to say play the other ones, because maybe just with the guide handy. Not, you know, not just copying the guide, but... Like, don't, like, if you're stuck for more than 5 minutes, go, okay, I'm going to look it up.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. So I guess, like, get the special editions because they have the hints built in, and right, you can just press a button and it will give you them to you an increasing, like, they'll be increasingly telling
less
you.
Less of a hint and more of just saying it.
Yeah, basically. Like, hey, have you thought about, like, this is what you're meant to do, right? And, like, well, if you were to look for this thing, where would you look? Et cetera. And eventually it's just like, look, just go over there and do this.
Hey, look, are you stupid?
And apparently I am.
The book is we asked you to look for a book 4 hints ago. Go to the library, idiot.
Yeah, basically. The special editions are the way to go.
Cool.
Yeah.
Anything else?
No, that's it.
All right. Well, Greg, why don't you take us home?
Okay, yeah, well, I guess we've checked in a little bit on that Splatfest. We did get round to talking about that last week because we were too busy with, serious.
Important emails.
Very important stuff. But, so I will just kind of recount that a little bit. I'm sure anybody who did participate, seemingly from just what I've gathered online, had a similar experience in terms of before it happened. It's kind of talking like, oh, you know, I wonder how the tricolor battles will go, considering, you know, the kind of feedback from the pre-release Splatfest that, you know, didn't really seem that balanced. And, you know, the team that was defending, from the sort of central position, having sort of quote unquote won the first phase of the Splatfest, seemed to be at too much of a disadvantage and all that. And, you know, very much a sort of Schrodinger's cat situation ensued, in which the box was never opened because, you'd be damned if you could get a tricolor battle. Obviously, you know, the Splatfest begins and, there's a whole phase where, you know, you can't play them because you've got to get to that sort of second stage where they're like, okay, this team of the three is in the lead before, you know, that would even happen. But once you could like queue for those games, or certainly, you know, I mean, I didn't have that long, you know, to get in there, because most of the kind of time I spent on the Splatfest was before that point, in the weekend. But you didn't get one. You queued for it, and then you entered a game, and it was just a regular, you know, two team turf war again. So I'm sure some people, you know, seemingly did get some experience with it, but this was very much in contrast to the original, the premier Splatfest, which I didn't play that much, but I had no difficulty actually if I queued up for a tricolor battle, I generally got one. And then in this case, I did not. So that's one way of handling it, I guess. It's just sort of took it away. I don't know whether people were just staying away because, you know, they thought it wasn't, going to be balanced or something. Maybe the people in the team, I forget which team it was that was in the lead at the halfway point, were like, oh, screw that. We're not putting in for tricolor. We're not going to tank our own team's chances by going in for tricolor battles. So yeah, that it remains, at least from my perspective, entirely hypothetical, in terms of if there was any rebalancing or adjustments that had been made or continue to need to be made. I guess we'll see at the next one. But the team gear was the pick I made. I believe I mentioned that on air, and it did win. So I got some extra sea snails snails or whatever they are to like add some slots onto gear items appropriately enough equipment. So yeah, that was big, very, very big. But I mean, it's the Splatfests are a funny thing because sometimes it's, oh yeah, you know, that time where all you can do is turf war and not play the rank battle stuff like Splat Zones and Tower Control and Rainmaker and stuff. I don't know. I do like the ambience of it, like where all the levels are at night and the paint like has this luminescent quality to it, and stuff. Like I certainly like the vibes of it and the way they change the plaza. So every, you know, it's all like this, all the other musical performances are happening and all that. The way they kind of do it as a sort of atmospheric thing is all very good. The events itself, maybe a bit less. Although it's kind of nice to sort of, you know, encourage you to go back to regular turf war every now and again, because like I said, it is a different experience from the ranked games and is, you know, fun on its own terms. But, yeah, and you could still do Salmon Run as well if you wanted to do that as a whole separate thing. But I still had fun playing it, but we'll see if they get any of this stuff straightened out for the next one. Other than that, I had this sort of earmark for a while, having sort of played it on Xbox, but the Cuphead DLC, The Delicious Last Course, I remember when Cuphead came out on Twitch originally, it, you know, reviewed very well, that, you know, it was pretty much a flawless transition from Xbox to Switch. You know, it ran really well, looked really great. And certainly with getting the new model for me, the OLED model of the Switch, it kind of came back to me of like, oh yeah, you know, that I bet that would look really good on the new screen. And you know, there has been the DLC, which I played the base game on Xbox, very much enjoyed that. DLC reviewed well, and you know, I could have bought it on Xbox and, you know, got around to it eventually, but it's just, you know, more convenient for me to play it portably. And so I did and very much enjoyed it. I mean, there was no real sort of downside in particular of like the fact that on Switch, obviously I did not have a completed save that I would have had on Xbox, because you could kind of just very quickly go to the kind of place that will take you to the new sort of island, the new region where the DLC is. It's not like you have to complete a bunch of the game really to get to that point. And then in terms of like, obviously with Cuphead, you earn coins or find coins, and you can spend those on like upgrades, or you know, have different guns and different special attacks and things. But as part of the DLC, you have the option of a sort of charm, and you play as Miss Chalice, the sort of third character now. And she has this very versatile moveset, kind of as standard, essentially. You have kind of like the parrying, instead of like a jump that you could kind of land on the pink objects that will kind of help charge your special meter and stuff. You have a sort of dash that does that, that can also be used in the air, which is, you know, pretty useful just in and of itself, let alone the ability to parry things. And then you also have like a dodge roll with some invincibility frames in there. So like it's a double jump, like it's a very versatile, capable moveset unto itself. So I didn't have to worry about feeling underpowered, like taking a character that hadn't had all those coins and purchased like the weapons I wanted that I would have done on my Xbox save. They try to take that into the Delicious Last Course stuff, which is, you know, by definition, it didn't seem like it was like crazy advanced or anything compared to the stuff in the base game, which was, you know, itself pretty tricky. But, you know, it's certainly more advanced than like the early going of the game. That's for sure. And so just went through it with Miss Chalice. Really excellent stuff in terms of, you know, the kind of visual designs, the scenarios, the beautiful animation, but also the actual game design part of it, you know, the kind of patterns and all that. It's just obviously quite reminiscent of like Alien Soldier that Treasure did on Genesis all those years ago, in terms of it's mostly a boss rush kind of game. There were in the original sort of base Cuphead a few run and gun parts where you could earn coins or all that, but it wasn't really a big part of the game. It's mostly just facing off against bosses, and you know, here it's all that. It's just all bosses all the way through. And you do have a sort of subset of encounters that are kind of only based on parrying. Like, you don't get to use your gun anymore. You can only attack the bosses by parrying sort of things back at them, which is kind of an interesting change up of the kind of design of the regular bosses. And then other than that, you've just got, you know, kind of straight up normal ones where you can use your gun. But both kinds in this case were very good, and unsurprisingly, it does look really, really nice on the Switch OLED screen. Especially, it's those deep black sort of levels that I think really set, like, you know, yeah, when you get the sort of film effect with the kind of print damage and stuff, but just on top of it, what, you know, the really, really truly black background, it's just more effective, it's more evocative, that sort of effect. And just great looking game anyway, obviously, but with the colors and everything, I thought that was something, you know, I would enjoy, and it panned out every bit as well as I'd hoped. And I may well now kind of maybe go and play some of the content I'd already played with Miss Chalice, and then maybe come back and do the DLC with Cuphead or Mugman, you know, like to see how that way goes as well, because it's just a lot of fun. Certainly very much my kind of thing. Other than that, it did kind of inspire me to think, you know, I should have a look at a few more of like my games, my older games on this new model. And so I put Tropical Freeze in for a bit, and that was very nice as well. Because the thing about that, I think, even more than just like obviously the color reproduction and all that kind of stuff, just the screen being a bit bigger is a big deal in that, because it is so dense with visual detail, like background details and stuff, just like these little, you know, I was playing some stuff in the second world, the kind of Dutch world, you know, autumnal, you know, oh, kind of Netherlands, yeah. You know, with the windmills and the rolling bits of Edam or whatever, like, and just like this, you know, you can kind of see, I'm sure, you know, I did absorb some of this stuff a fair bit, you know, when I played it before, especially more so on Switch, because the thing about playing it on Wii U is I did do it a lot off TV. And while the screen was the same size as the original Switch's screen, of course, the resolution was lower, color reproduction was much less good, you know, because it was streaming and, yeah, the, you know, kind of certain colors would bleed and all that kind of thing. But just see, like, little, like, woodpeckers, like, you know, going at trees and all these, you know, typical retro studios, kind of dense visual design, but, you know, applied to the sort of whimsical decay setting. It just reminds you how much I love that game. It's really, really very good. Something I like a lot, but also just how good the graphical work is and, you know, sort of seeing it in this way. Obviously, yeah, I've played it a bit on the TV back, you know, on Wii U, probably more so than on Switch. But certainly like when you're kind of hunting for the puzzle pieces and all the Kong letters and stuff, it just, I think the version that I remember the most of that game, of my time with that game, would probably be just playing off TV on Wii U. And then, you know, seeing it like this, it's a big jump. It's like really, really good. And that's, whoa, God, it's amazing. Was that early 2014? I want to say that game. So release, like, it is getting quite old. That's the thing about, you know, when you think about the sort of Metroid Prime 4 saga / farce that continues to unfold incredibly slowly. Like, it, you know, like, that's the thing. Like, it just kind of, makes you like, yeah, you know, like when retro was doing, I know a lot of people's reaction to when Tropical Freeze was announced is, oh, they're doing DK again. You know, but it's like, well, I'd say it was a really good game and it's better than just getting nothing for ages.
God, it was early 2014 too. It was February.
Yeah, it was meant to be like a 13 holiday-ish kind of game, I think, and it got delayed a bit. So it is getting quite long in the
season. It's almost 10 years old.
I know. The original, the re-releases and stuff, and the fact I have gone back to it a few times, kind of disguised, like, yes, it's getting pretty old. So, but a great game. And I'll have to, I also had a little look at Okami HD on there. You know, as another kind of, you know, the textured look and all that, you know, kind of Cuphead made me think of that. I had a look at that and all that. I'm quite taken with this new model. I mean, it was really just a matter of necessity. But it, you know, the improvement is, yeah, it's modest. Let's not overstate it, but it's significant all the same. And I do like it because I have, like, on occasion just sort of, you know, in the midst of like transferring everything, kind of getting, set up, I've gone back, you know, pulled out the old one. And it is just like, oh yeah, it's kind of small, kind of dull.
Yeah.
It's, when you start to get used to the new one, it's tough to go back. So I think that'll mostly just be in a dock, you know, or something, maybe called upon every now and again, or, you know, God forbid, in a multiplayer scenario one day. But yeah, I'm very, very happy with the new model.
Cool. Anything else?
No, I think that will do it.
All right. Well, in fact, so we talked about it before the show, but I don't want to leave Matt there. John, you ordered a Steam Deck.
I did, yeah. So I'll have more about that next week.
Cool.
First impressions and the like.
Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to it. I'm very interested to hear how it hits you.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully not literally. So on that, I think we've pretty much concluded our business for today. You can send emails to rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. I made a joke beforehand that we were going to talk about the Mario trailer, this 2.5-minute Mario trailer for like 40 minutes. I think we actually went over that, so, you know.
Oh, yeah. How much of it was about the Pilot Wings trailer that was like 90 seconds, though? So,
yeah, I mean, how much was about... the Pilot Wings trailer.
Well, how much of it was about Mario's ass, too? I mean, you can't overlook that.
Significantly more than it should have been.
Or can you? It's not even there.
Apparently I could, yes. Unlike some people.
If you look really carefully, there's a gummy Venus de Milo stuck to his rear end.
All right, we just need somebody to reference The Critic, and we'll have completed the trifecta. All right, well, Greg, what is our music to close the show out this week?
Well, this is the first episode we're recording in October. I guess the last one went out, in October. We're in October. It means only one thing: baseball playoffs. Now, yes. Nintendo's former possession, the Seattle Mariners,
still a minority investor.
They're not the controlling owners anymore, but what year was it again in the 90s when they took control?
Like 90 early-ish 90s. I can't remember the exact year.
Yeah, obviously before the Ken Griffey baseball game start coming out, obviously, that was something that they did, as a result of having taken possession of the team, and Ken Griffey Jr. being the very excited young player on that team at the time. But the Seattle Mariners just concluded their reign, as it were, as the owner of the longest playoff drought in North American sports.
It's longer than you think.
They clinched. It's a shame. The timing is a shame, because if they could have just clinched like a day earlier, I could have done this last week, because I don't really like doing it now, because by the time this goes out, Seattle's postseason journey may already be over, sadly. I don't like that, but take it from someone who has drunk from this particular poison chalice for quite a few years himself. It is a great relief just to have that behind you. Even if you go straight out, it's like, at least we don't have to think about that anymore. But yeah, Seattle did not make the playoffs from 2001 up until last week. So just think about that in the context of Nintendo history, how much changed from, really kind of a really difficult time, certainly for the console business in 2001 and all that, to where we are now, all the kind of ebbs and flows. And for all that time, the Mariners did not make the playoffs. They came pretty agonizingly close last year, didn't they? This year you had the extra spot, which, even though they would not finish in the last spot, it did help, because basically, the three American League wildcard teams all knew they were in. So it kind of was a bit of a much of a muchness where any of them finished, except Toronto get to host Seattle.
Right.
No home playoff game unless Seattle get through, which is a shame, because I'm sure the atmosphere would be, pretty interesting there, for a home game. So in that sense, certainly you kind of wish them well and hope they get to see that. But,
about a third of that lineup is former Reds players, which really makes me feel good about where my team finished with 100 losses on the nose. Yeah.
Well, I guess the Nats had 107. So
that's true. Great. We're not the absolute fucking shit stain worse.
You when you have the lean times, you take what you can, I guess.
That Nats team was gnarly bad.
It's very, very nice for the Mariners to end that particular streak, that's for sure. But indeed, October does also mean Halloween is near coming. It's the month where we celebrate all things macabre. So I thought,
the Washington Nationals.
Yeah, we could certainly, but no. October marks the 25th anniversary of the North America release of Castlevania Symphony of the Night. Now, ooh. It was the Japanese release was in March, but I mean, what's spooky about that? I mean, April maybe, you get a famous case of someone coming back from the dead, but March certainly not. So I decided to celebrate, the appropriate October sort of mark for the 25th anniversary of Symphony of the Night. And of course, it's still not out on Switch. I mean, it's absolutely crazy. I think the last time we used something from Symphony of the Night would have been when we had the announcement of Castlevania coming to Smash Brothers, right. 4+ years ago, however long that was. So if you'd said to me then, like, yep, 4 or some odd years is going to pass, it still won't be there. It's kind of crazy, especially when you think of some of the things that have come to Switch in the interim, you know, bloody Night Trap. Many of the things that were synonymous with the PlayStation, you know, Crash Bandicoot Collection, Final Fantasy 7, 8, 9, Klonoa, like, it's all there. It's all on Switch now, whether, you know, Nintendo players grew up with them or not. Like, even recently, things like, oh yeah, you'll get a Konami collection of all their Turtles games from the 80s and 90s that, you know, requires like licensing and all this, you know, lovingly kind of preserved development materials and all that. But you won't get Symphony of the Night. I mean, it's mind blowing. I certainly hope it will be corrected before the heat death of the universe or whatever other benchmark one might use. But it continues to have a great soundtrack. That's one of the reasons why you'd be so enthused about it coming back in some form. And in this case, I think it was Lost Painting that I went with 4 years ago or whatever. But in this case, I'm going to go with Crystal Teardrops, which for me kind of encapsulates how wonderfully eclectic the soundtrack is, because it's like, okay, we've got your kind of synthesized, you know, kind of video game like elements in there, instruments in there. But then we also have kind of bass and piano that's like very jazzy. And then we get the kind of choir and organ to give you that kind of gothic, you know, horror feel as well. So you just the kind of the grandeur at the same time as this kind of weird sort of chill nature to it. It's that's what I love about it. It definitely, even though it was not the same composer, it's what, and you know, it's obviously is a game, it's really a sequel to Rondo of Blood. The soundtrack always felt to me like a true successor to Castlevania 4's soundtrack, which had a similar feel, just doing it with the, you know, Super Famicom sort of sample based sound chip of, you know, kind of jazzy but also, you know, very atmospheric and eclectic, and just holding out hope that one day it'll happen. But you know, the more time goes on, the more sort of improbable it seems.
It almost feels like they're doing it on purpose at this point.
I mean, we know like Sony supposedly kind of suggested that they do that one that was basically the PSP like port or whatever.
Right.
So it's not like they put it on PS4 seemingly. So that doesn't fill you with the most confidence. But yeah, so maybe Nintendo would have to sort of, you know, kind of be the impetus here. I mean, supposedly that was the case with Live Alive, wasn't it? That Nintendo suggested that they wanted to bring it back for NSO, and then that ended up culminating in them publishing a HD 2D remake.
Very expensive remake.
Yeah, so I don't know, maybe we could hold that out for something like that, but only if Nintendo, you know, fronts the money for it, presumably.
Good lord.
All right, well, that is going to do it for us. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Later.
Bye-bye.